So before we start the episode, I just want to give some quick information about this episode. Really nice episode with Tomasz Liborowski, trumpet player, but then we had some technical issues. So it seems like one of the microphones dies during the interview. It's a really nice interview and I hope you will enjoy it either way, but I tried to salvage it by making you hear from one of the other microphones. So the sound will change during the interview, and of course the quality will be compromised of the sound quality, but the quality of what Tomasz says is still intact. Yeah, so that's all, and enjoy the episode either way.
Hello and welcome to Uncovering the Seniors, our podcast about the avant-garde free music scene here in Copenhagen. Our guest today is the great Tomasz Dubrowski.
Yay!
Was that kind of right pronounced?
Yeah, well, I don't know. No, it's not right for sure, but it's all right. I'm used to it.
I just noticed because I was listening to your music on your way here, and I noticed that you have at least on Google Music, you had the one, you were different artists depending of if you had the A with the thing.
It's always
and
the
then
issue.
The A,
right?
Normal A.
Oh. Right.
So you were like five different artists.
Ah. I thought it was only three, but I have to check on that. Yeah, I was trying to.
So please tell us one how your name is correctly trouble.
Well, my name is Tomasz Dąbrowski.
Thank
it's
you.
This, you know, it's this A with a hook that pronounces on.
Yeah. Okay.
Almost like you would, I mean, not almost exactly like if you would spell it with the O-M,
Domo,
okay. Dąbrowski. Actually, there's like two versions of that surname.
Okay.
Depending on, I don't know, probably somebody thought about it at some point. Because it's just stupid that, you know, nobody, like, I've been in Scandinavia for now, what, like 11 years?
Yeah.
And nobody can pronounce it correctly, apart from Polish people.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe I should do something about it. But I actually even myself started like doing it the international way.
Just okay, yeah. So that people remember.
Yeah, them. Yeah, just like Dąbrowski, whatever.
just
listen.
Just go with the flow.
I don't care. Just like.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're a trumpet player and composer, and you said you've been living here in Scandinavia for 11 years now.
Yes.
Being busy in the music scene, playing with the people here and internationally.
Mm. Yeah.
Then you are right now, you are the artist in residence at the Mandagsklubben at 5E.
Correct.
So you're doing four concerts with your projects, presenting old and new stuff, right?
Or, it's actually all new stuff.
It's all new stuff.
It's either like new configurations or like now as we speak, I'm after three concerts out of four.
Yeah.
And then on Monday, we also do a concert with the Ocean Fanfare, which is a band. And then it's representing all new music because we're doing this trilogy. This is the second album. So it's all new.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
So how was the residency been? Like, how was you? I would have only been to one of your concerts.
Which one?
The one where you had... a battle with Kasper Tranberg. It was the battle of the trumpet. It was great.
We called it the trumpet medley, but I guess battle.
It was more like trumpet UFC, I would say. And then like Kasper Tom was like the referee in between. Like
he was like,
you're not allowed to eye poke. You're not allowed to eye poke.
Oh my god.
I don't know.
It was really cool though. I mean, battle has this like negative connotation, but it's not negative necessarily.
It seems like you kind of had some pre-assumptions of what's gonna happen.
No. When I got there, it was just like this.
Yeah,
the trumpet. It was really powerful in that sense. Like,
man, for me, it was special because I mean, Kasper was my first teacher here, and like back in Odense.
Yeah.
So he was the one who kind of opened my head to many things. So like being able to play and do in a concert situation. That's great. That's very inspiring. And it's one of the thing that I think most people aspire to is the sound. Like Casper has it. Like even if he if he buzzes on the mouthpiece, it's just Casper.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He might disagree, but I don't care. Mm-hmm. Like that's what I think.
Yeah.
But then let's maybe go through the different projects. I was there on the third, so the last one you did with Rune Lose on drums.
Oh yeah, with the Frolic.
Yeah,
yeah,
Frolic
yeah.
Lundin, exactly. But yeah. let's maybe go through it chronologically.
Okay, so from the beginning.
Yes.
So the first one was a quartet with Lore Anka and Knut Finsrud and Peter Nielsen.
Was that like a free improvised thing?
Yeah, totally. I wanted to, like one thing is to play this improvised music with people you know, but another thing is that to like try to find configurations that haven't played
together.
Like for example, Peter and Knut, they never played together.
Oh, okay.
And then it, you know how it is. Like it can either go very well or kind of mediocre.
Yeah, but it can't go bad.
It can go bad, which is not a bad thing if you think about it. here it just clicked, and I mean, of course, Lotta and Peter, they played a lot together, and I also did a few things with Lotta, but a while ago. Yeah. So, and then we had some, some issues, like, Peter, and he requires to have an amp because of his back. Yeah. He has some issues with his back. So, we showed up at 5E, and I asked them, I sent them emails, and like, hey, do you have a bass amp? And they're like, yep. And then we show up, and it's a guitar amp.
Yeah.
Nobody knows. And he was, he could have just, get pissed or anything. But he was super cool about it. And then we made it work.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it was, very, very, rough energy. Yeah. How I remember it.
Because I think there used to be, a bass amp, but it got lost. a year ago or something. I don't know who, or maybe it was someone who just borrowed it and put it there. But
I think it's funny that
you
would expect that you ask and they're like sure, and then it's there. At least they should. I mean, they could have just said no, then I would think something else. But it's just like no, we have it, and then it turns out it's a guitar amp.
It kind of fits the style of the place, though.
Right
there.
Like, yeah,
it's a bit of a community driven
that's true, and it's incredible that it's there. And it came, I don't know, it's been before I had this residency, it's been a while since I've been there. It seems like it became this extension of the conservatory vibe.
There's a lot of students there nowadays. That's true,
which it's I suppose it's a great thing to just keep things rolling. So people can get a chance to play and try different setups and the Monday beat the big band and all that stuff.
Yeah, I think it's a great entrance into the scene, into this specific scene of free improvised music or creative music, experimental music. Right. Because it turned out this thing that all the students go to when they come here, and then it's a community thing, community hangout, and to get to know also the older people from the scene, right?
Yeah.
I don't know who told me that, but when they were talking about 5E and this Mendes Club, somebody said this is the place where you hear the best and the worst concert of the year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's,
and you can hear that during one night, right?
Yeah.
It can be back to back. That's why I love it. We talked about this before on this podcast, but I love being confused there. That's my favorite thing. Right. Just going there being super confused about stuff.
Don't check the schedule.
Yeah. And you're like, what the fuck is going on right now? and that's so great.
Yeah.
I think that's what makes it shine and what really attracts me to that stuff.
Yeah, that's, I guess, some of the qualities also in music.
Yes.
Of course.
Sort of set things up or being asked to do stuff, but when things go wrong, that's fun.
So that's also what you aimed for with that first project, right? Like, because it was not a thing that you practiced
I was just a hoc situation, I know all of those people are very strong.
Yeah,
and I love playing with Peter. He is the best. I mean, his sound and all of
them. Is Peter Friis Nielsen, right?
Peter Friis Nielsen is just incredible. What he can do and how strong it is, what he does.
Yeah. I think one of my favorite things with him is like watching him set up, because like normally he sets up his equipment and then he puts into it and then he plays like this super. He plays like when he checks the sound, he plays like when he plays the concert. So it's just, so it's super intense. Some people like you check. Yeah, it has sound. Yeah, it's this sound. But he's like. Just like he would do in the concert, it's so intense, and everyone is like walking around with like fixing stuff. And he's yeah. like, I love that. It's so great.
Yeah, I mean, everybody, I guess, has their own routine with that stuff, but he's just, you know, he's been going for so many years with that stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it is included in the concert situation at that venue that things just, you know, are what they are.
Yeah. Do you plan on doing anything more with that project since it was like it clicked and is it very loose right now?
Yeah, well, I don't really know. It's more like unexpected fruits.
Yeah.
Because I was occupied, like preoccupied with, you know, making a lot of work and asking everybody, and you know, so it could happen. And then I guess I just need some time to like evaluate that stuff. Yeah. Like, because both with the Death Quartet, like everybody was super happy with it, and also with the Caspa, we already talked about doing something more.
Yeah.
And then the last one, which is this quartet with Falk Lundin and Rune and Marius, I would love to play more with that because it just
seems, you know, like we all do musicians here, so you kind of can resonate with those sort of feelings, like.
You set up a gig, you know, you rehearse and stuff, and then you know from the very first second that it's there.
Yeah.
Like, the only thing you need to do is, like, just shut up and enjoy it. You know? Like, there is no, like, the music, you know, everybody gets it. You know, there's, I mean, the material is not, I mean, a lot of the music I play is ridiculously hard, so you have to practice. But with that band, it's just, like, music that is, like, you know, like one sheet, you know, like one A4 page, and that's the tune. And it just feels so comfortable to do that, you know? So I like the feeling, so. Yeah.
But the thing with, like, when you do normally or very often something really hard, and then you do the step back to something simpler, or that's always like, it's like being, you're wearing gravity boots, and then suddenly they're off, kind of. That's how it feels for me, at least sometimes. It's just like, whoa, this thing again, like when you've been practicing like or working on something like super rhythmical whatever, and then you go back and try to play like a simple standard, and suddenly like, whoa. this yeah, it's really,
yeah, I guess it's the one thing is the context, another thing is the, you know, how written material can, you know, lock down your creativity in a way, because brain can only do as much. So, you know, it's a like often situation. It's maybe a bit far out example, but like I remember like going to New York and my first visit there, you know, like growing up with reading books and like how incredible it was. And then I show up there and go like first 3 days, I heard like two concerts every night and they all sucked.
So bad.
Okay. It was so, like, you know, they're not bad that
they couldn't play. Of course they can play. But it was so tasteless. And it was so common that
you would have even some like, big shots, you know, people consider like very well known. And then you show up to the gig and then they solo great. But then it's like they play tunes, they play charts, you know. And then they can fucking play the theme, the head. And you can hear it right away, you know. So this, like so weird, like this balance between written material and between improvisation, right?
Yeah.
Which, yeah, sometimes it's hard, but I mean, I guess in New York, like nobody has time to do anything, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a different vibe also, right? Like, usually it's, at least from what I heard from New York, is often more about also no rehearsal, just showing up on the gig like with completely new sheets, and that every day, right? And that, I guess, enforces this problem that people show up and actually didn't really look at the music beforehand, maybe. You know, and if you have the right skill, I mean, it's possible.
But I mean, the way you describe it is, you know, it's a good way to learn the skill.
You know, in the end, like, I was unlucky to, like, be, you know, exposed to the process of that shit. Mm. And
it wasn't something I expected, you know.
Mm. And maybe not even enjoyed. Like, because sometimes you can, like, rough things or things that are rough around the edges, right, can be like,
you know,
it gives me something, but it's not, like so completely smooth. Right. But yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, one thing is, you know, rehearsing stuff, and another thing is playing it.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, yeah.
Right.
But at that time, that was like almost 10 years ago. It was good to see that, actually, because then I realized that, like, I should not, you know, that's not the way to go. Like, that's not the way to look at stuff that it's, you know, America is the place to go, because that's what it used to be. And now, what can you say? There's so many great musicians and so many creative people here.
Yeah,
that it was just like refreshing to see that, you know, there's this like 99% of people that suck, and then there's this 1% that is just nowhere else to be found. But that's just 1%, which means, you know, if you go to 10 concerts, 9 gonna suck, and then there's the one that's gonna be mind blowing. And I also had those experiences.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You
know? Did that strengthen your decision to just focus on the European scene and stay here and play here, or?
I never had anything to move to the States. Okay, I love, you know, I love going to the places. I have this thing with big cities, like I go there for like a few days or like hang out and play, but just for a few days. Like, I could never.
Okay.
I have no desire to be in one of those,
like New York or those places.
Like live there for
Like just even go there for
half a year. Copenhagen is small enough, or?
Well, I live in Malmö.
In Malmö, yeah, okay.
Yeah. But I mean, I have very strong connections to Copenhagen. Copenhagen is great because it's just big enough, you know. So like the scene is big enough, so you can find your little spot. And then what I always like here is the good airport. Which in my case, you know, it means a lot. Like, it literally takes me like half an hour to two different airports.
Yeah, yeah.
So
the one in Malmö and then right across the bridge.
Yeah.
The one in Kastrup.
So,
come here.
So I can just, I travel quite a lot, so it's important. I don't, you know, this thing with the experiences with the American musicians, I mean, it's, you know, some of it's incredible. Like when I play with Tyshawn Surrey, he was a drummer, you know. It's incredible, but that also took time.
Hmm.
But you did a recording with him, didn't you?
Yeah, I did a few recordings with him.
Okay, yeah.
Because I met him at the workshop, like, back in the days, like, 2014 or something. And I just knew that I had to do something. And then I was, I don't know if you can call it stupid enough or brave enough to do, like, a duo with him.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy is, he is what he is.
Mm.
but, you know... Like, for example, with Tyshawn, it was, I went to New York and I got this grant so I could do something. I went there and then we rehearsed. I remember we rehearsed in the same room where there was like a Beyonce band rehearsing for some tour or something without her. So there was no like celebrities or anything, but it was just the super weird, loud, you know, R&B shit being played. And then, you know, like I brought this like tunes that I tried it with a few different drummers and they all like, shit. And I brought it to Tyshawn, and of course he didn't even check it out. So
I thought it was gonna be tough, but then, you know, the guy has like photographic memory.
Yeah.
He just played it once, and then I was like almost asking him like, "Hey, you want to do it again?" I was like,
no. You know, with this like in the back from the other room, because, you know, even if you pay a lot of money for the rehearsing space somewhere in Brooklyn, there is no sound separation,
yeah.
You know, it's shit,
yeah.
You know,
okay.
And you have like a, you know, I don't know,
like 10 square meters to share for like a queen set.
Oh, that sounds hardcore.
Yeah, but you know,
money. So all with the dollar sign over there. But you know, so we did the album, and then I did like a small tour. And, you know, the music on the recording is one thing, but, you know, if you play something a few times in a live situation, it just gets, you know, gets more... I don't know if it gets better, it just
gets more three-dimensional in a way. So So I mean, that was.
That's an interesting way to think of it. That it doesn't necessarily get better, but like you get it. Yeah, I've never.
Well, it depends. It depends on what you think is better. You know, because that's usually that's very common for composers, for example. That when you write your own shit, it's hard to let go. Right? Yeah. Like you write. You write something, and then all of a sudden you become like this control freak. Was like, no, this, you know, this bar is, you know, should be a metaphor.
And next one is pianissimo and then piano you know, like this serialist crazy shit.
And it's just like you miss perspective, like like overall perspective and stuff. How to do that. So I don't know, better or worse, I don't know. I mean, but in the end, either it works or it doesn't.
But how do you feel like what do you feel is there, because it seems like you've thought about it more than I have. So what is the main component that you would say will change? Like, how does it become three-dimensional? Like, when you play it, like what is, can you define what it changes? Or
There's probably, if you could do it head-to-head, you could define it.
Yeah.
But it's impossible, obviously, to do that.
Yeah.
The nature of this music is that it's going to be played, you know, differently.
Yeah.
And at least from what I write, like, I don't want people to play exactly what I wrote. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because then it's this, like, you know.
So do you feel like the three-dimensional part becomes a thing that the player takes it and makes the thing that you wrote that you don't want exactly played to their own? Is that the more than?
Yeah, no, it's more than that. It's this thing that you know what's at stake. Like, know what are we doing? You know.
Yeah.
It happens with people who are very good readers, like we talk about with the Sideman chops, you know, that they can just read anything, but to be able to add like creativity and musicality to that, it's something else.
Yeah,
that's my perception and my limited experience. It was always like that when recording before a tour, the stuff would be, I would say, less alive,
right?
Because people are sticking more to trying to do it correct, maybe,
right.
And I guess that changes with how experienced people are. But
But then again, it doesn't necessarily make it sound better. It just, from a like performer, some point of view, it makes, you know, it feels that it's more natural in a way, or that it's like, it feels that it's better somehow.
Yeah.
But better can be anything. Can be being played better, like the dynamics are better, or like, because, you know, like playing stuff for a long time can also end up in you know, situations when like it's like chaotic, because somehow people feel more free to do stuff, and then you can say that the form of the piece loses its kind of construction.
Yeah, or they already played something that worked best and they don't want to redo it because they always want to play something new, right? And then
thinking about this, like, there's this thing about second or third gig on tour.
That suddenly is much worse because people try to forcefully do something new, or
there can be many reasons for that shit, but it's, you know, it's everybody's like, oh, the first concert, you know, and then when the first one is good, then the second, you know, it's hard to keep cool. Like,
but it's that's experience. Something to about expectations also, maybe, that you
it's the nature of this thing.
Yeah, but I mean, it was awesome. We expect greater things next, and then it might be the same even, but it feels worse because
you don't know the exact reason, I guess, right? Yeah.
I mean, the best thing is just to be able to listen to that back after you forgot about how it felt.
Yeah.
So you just, I guess what we're talking about is pretty much is being able to have the overview of the whole piece of music, other than having in mind just your own playing or whatever, you know, because even though, I don't know, like something you record, it might not sound your best, but it's the best overall experience with the band, and that's something that's oftentimes gets lost, you know, because of this aim to be perfect in so many ways.
Yeah, I think maybe like a small dose of Alzheimer's would be really great when you record, because then you could just go in, and then when you go out to listen, you already forgot that you record, and then you can listen to it, and it was like, pow! That would be such, like, you
should, like, selective Alzheimer's.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, yeah, like a small dose of Alzheimer's. You can just, like, I don't know how you take it, maybe through the eye or something. Yeah. Like, really horrible.
Oh, I know a few people who could use that. Yeah, totally. Okay. You should brand it, man.
It's like, yeah, the red thing from Man in Black.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Oh, that device thing. Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah, that's what Manfred Eicher has. That's why he's such a like established or famous producer, is because he, like, just used the forget thing on all his people. Like, ah, you don't remember, and then, like, oh, it's all great. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
And then, so you did that was the first thing on Monday, and then it was the trumpet thing that we talked,
yeah,
briefly about.
And then, but do you want to maybe add your perspective of the trumpet thing more? Or
I wasn't mocking it. I thought it was awesome.
No. Yeah, I would love to do more of it. Yeah, it's just.
But it's like a really. It seemed like. It's a constellation that demands a lot from everyone. Like, you could, there are these constellations you can play in that are somehow simpler to play in, because it might feel like frequency. It feels all the frequently in a simple and nice way, and so it seems demanding in that you really, no one can really relax. No. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I was so relaxed, and I think that was the
okay.
That was the one when I was just like, yeah, because, you know, because both of those guys, I know them so long, yeah, for such a long time, so,
and they're also really great musicians, right?
Yeah, and then their level of trust is just like,
yeah,
you can't go wrong. No. I mean, even if what is wrong, it doesn't really matter, because, like, the choices they make, they're just like, it's just like, I just, you know, like the situations when you're there, and I had it that night, I remember. That I just wanted to, like, listen to them play, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I was just like, okay, I'm gonna play, you know? Or like, okay, now.
Yeah.
You know, like, to, like, shift the pace of it. But it's a very comfortable configuration. It felt like that to me, at least. But from the audience perspective, could be. It's quite intense.
It's intense, but that's also, I think it's the nature, a little bit of the instrument, the trumpet, but I think it's also the nature of the players. But because both you and Kasper really project.
Right.
You not in this loud, oh no, it's too loud, but you really project your sound to the audience.
Yeah.
I remember that very distinctly from, like, I heard you solo many years ago.
Yeah.
At Tuomo. You remember the first Freedom Jazz Festival at Tuomo? You played at this boat?
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
wow.
And you played solo, and and I really remember you, like, you capture the room in like this,
man,
with your presence.
Was, wow.
And I think that's unique, and it might be a little bit of a trumpet thing, but it's also, I think it's like a personality thing, which is really nice as an audience member.
Yeah, I think I mean, thank you. But there's the thing that that, you know, you can have people playing loud and it's horrible. Mm. And you can have people playing loud that is just, you can't get enough of it.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's, on, you know, on drums, like, people refer to it as a touch, right? So you can have, you know, like, I can imagine there's no way I could have enough volume of, like, I don't know, if I could get a chance to listen to, like, Elvin Jones, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
And to hear that, like, I mean, there's no way it could be too loud.
Yeah.
There's no, you know.
No.
And then there's, I mean, it's not like a shaming game, but there's, at the same time, there's, like, people who, like,
play too loud.
They play,
it's too loud, right?
Yeah, they play too loud, but it's also, there's the touch of it.
Yeah.
I also, you know, know people who play, play loud, and it's
fine. Like, that, what you said when you think about it. Like, also with, like, with Casper. Like, I don't know about myself. Like, I'm just.
I think you're the same. For my perspective. Ooh. Yeah.
But, like, it can't be too loud. It just can't be, because it's like the sound, you know.
Yeah.
Which is everything.
But the same also. It doesn't lose intensity when it's soft. I think that like when you have both extremes, that's like really. I think that's great.
Because, I mean, playing loud is, it seems, I mean, if you just, like, aim to play loud, it's either, like, who does it, like Mads Gustafsson,
like Peter Hotman, you know?
It's like some people call it artistic, you know, decision. It's just like on off. Like some people go for that, but it seems like an easy way out, you know.
I think,
Like in general, you know, or like he'll let
think,
you.
I think it fits Poetsman, but. I think it's true that it's an on-off thing. I totally agree with that.
Did you ever think about it, like with Poetsman? Okay, let me tell you the first time I heard Peter Poetsman. It was with Peter Fries, the same bass player that played that in the Pio Jorgensen, and they've been playing for decades. And I just came to Denmark, and in Odense they did like a workshop, and the workshop it was just like, you know, these people who like. We are surrounded by people who are educated in like conservatories or universities, and with that comes a certain vocabulary, a certain ability to describe things, you know. And they are just like they just been playing that, you know. So the workshop starts, and they're like, oh, "Okay, so we're just gonna play."
And then I heard Peter Poetsman and you know, and those two guys, and I couldn't believe what's happening. Seriously. Like the intensity of like I couldn't catch a breath, you know.
Yeah.
Like, and it keeps on, you know, it keeps on going. And then I went to the concert that evening, and it's just, man, I've never heard anything like that.
Yeah.
But I heard Peter Poetsman a few times afterwards, and. It's always the same thing. It's always the same goods, good quality, but same goods.
So you're saying
what we're talking about, that you always, you know, try to like redefine it somehow. I mean, with him it's just like you always get what you got the first time.
I remember Han Benning telling me a story once that he wrote the blues for Peter Poetsman and he was laughing his ass off, like Han Benning was. Like just saying like a blues for Peter Poetsman, right? And then Peter just did his thing.
Okay, I have to tell you, I don't know, Peter Fries told me once that when they on tour, you know, when you show up to a venue, and they would do those like long tours back in the days, like in the 90s. So they would, you know, every time they would show up to the gig, they would like take the instruments and Peter would, you know, play his... Yeah, simple. And Poetsman would always play like Dixieland music.
Okay, yeah.
Like Dixie tunes. And Peter said, I played with him for over 20 years, and those Dixie tunes didn't get better at all. It sounded like shit in the beginning.
And then, like, over the years, he just keeps on playing the same shit, and it doesn't get any better. It's just the same.
Nothing changes. You know? So I guess that's an artistic
also. He has embodied the universal constant.
Yeah, it's good to know that some things, you know, stay the same. Yeah, yeah. Like the fact that Peter Poetsman sucks and playing Dixie music. You know, that's what makes you fall asleep. You know.
The world fell apart, but Peter Poetsman is the same. Yeah. It's great. Yeah.
Think about it, like, first of all, it's one of those like legends who's still around.
Yeah.
Another thing is that, you know, this whole thing we're doing for the last, you know, 10, 15, 20 years is just like people try to get better at many things.
Yeah.
You have people who can do everything, you know. I'm not even talking about like creative, you know, good players, not just like, I don't know, big band people, because it's like a discipline, of, you know, in any way. But those guys, they just have this one thing.
Yeah, I thought a lot about it, because also here in the RMC where we are right now, they value a lot an artistic profile, and they write that in the curriculum, at least for the masters nowadays, right?
Yeah.
Where they try to make people have a artistic profile, and like Poetsman has a very strong one identity, right? And it's great. And I thought a lot about it, because also nowadays, I think, especially in the younger generation, it's like so normal to listen to Jay-Z and then switch to some techno and then switch to Metallica or whatever, right? And then switch to a classical piece. Like, I mean, especially music-educated people, it's like it's all over the place. Mm-hmm. And that's not a bad thing. And I think also, like, people that are not musicians, it's when you look at their... When you used to look at their iPod or you look at their Spotify playlist now or whatever, right? Like it's going through all the genres. And I think that also made people now branch out more, I think, and try to do incorporate more stuff, right? And I think that's also something that changed a bit over the years. I mean, from my young perspective.
And also, I mean, it's at least a theory that you could back up with the fact that now, before you had to buy your CDs,
exactly,
and you only had a limited amount of money, but now for 100 kroners, you have access to
everything.
Yeah, well, I mean,
not everything. There's
maybe
99.9.
You won't find Steve Lehman's octet, but I mean,
that's true. He's not on Spotify,
and maybe not Tim Burn, but I mean,
there's some
snake oil stuff. But like, if you want,
yeah.
True.
And it also comes with conservatories trying to turn you into someone that can play, and not every conservatory, right? But some conservatories try to make you someone that is capable of filling in a lot of positions.
Well, yeah, it's like occupation or like
craftsmanship in a way. Yeah.
Yeah, but I think that's a kind of handicapped way of seeing that.
Hmm.
Because it's not like I don't think at least. I hope that there is no conservatories that are just trying to educate, music making creatures that are just like able to do everything on the spot.
Mm.
It's, I guess the idea was to be able to give people all the tools they need to do whatever the hell they want.
Mm.
But that often is a problem, that you spend so much, that the balance between those things. That you spend so much time on getting all those skills, then after that you forget about thinking what are you gonna use it for?
For sure, right.
There's also what would Laplace's demon sound like? Like this demon that knows everything about everything.
Right.
Like, what happens when you know everything about everything? How will that sound? Like, if you know everything, literally everything about music, it probably would be, it would be insane, right?
I hope it would be like...
yeah, just a sine wave.
I know everything, I don't need any music, shut up.
Just white noise, everything at the same time.
I don't know, because you sometimes get the feeling that this is great, but this guy knows too much. I sometimes get that feeling. I wish he knew, he knows these four things. I wish he just didn't know one of them.
Yeah. And then, with some trumpet players that I wish they had only two fingers. You know, because this is this balance.
Yeah.
You know, because, I mean, what we're really talking about here is the difference between information and skill and, wisdom.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah,
different levels of that stuff. Like what you talk about, like the demon who knows it all.
Yeah.
It's all information, so I don't know, But then often we are in a situation, especially now, when people, can do more and more versatile stuff. When you hear people that talk a lot but don't really say anything, they can play 3-4 instruments, but so what? I guess it was Lee Konitz who said this great line. It was like some youngsters or some students. Said like, I know you can play now, say something.
And
I know it's a cliche thing to say, in a way, or it can be easily misunderstood. But, it's often something to keep in mind, I think.
Yeah.
So it's not, doesn't become too much of one thing, because, man, it's like drugs, like too much of will kill you, Like anything else, too much of one thing is gonna... it's gonna end up in a situation when there's a huge misbalance, and then you have to compensate for it one way or another, And that can be anything. That can be music that is impossible to play, or that can be, I don't know, hats, or that can be, outrageously written, bio text that you send out, trying so much to kind of make it work.
Yeah.
And that's... that's something that I wish. I don't know. I never went here. I only did like my APD here, the postgraduate thing.
Oh yeah.
So I haven't. I don't know how is the regular program, but
it keeps changing. I think.
Yeah, it keeps developing
very rapidly.
That's the, you know, but that's the thing, like, it seems like you have two extremes. Like, you either, or at least the idea is, seems extreme. Like, you have, you know, craftsmen, you know, musician, you know, who can play everything, and then you have artists.
It's, yeah.
It seems like very two, you know, two extreme situations, and it seems like we'd like to present it as there's not so much in common, which I strongly
disagree. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. No, I but it, I mean, I remember
it's like branding, right? Isn't it like, because you have to,
you have to say
what you have want to do to some industry, and they need to understand what, and that means that you have to make decisions based on some black and white principles.
Yeah.
Don't you think a little bit? I don't know, but
I don't know, but it's, you know, it's I guess we can all we all share those experiences when you know, it turns out that there's a lot of backstabbing both ways.
Yeah.
But
people who are consider themselves like artists, they talk shit about
people that spend too much time on their technique and stuff. Yeah.
Like people who play too much big band, or like people
who only
play big band, they are like, what the fuck? Like, he can't, you know, he can't play a single note, which is bullshit. And it's just
bad,
you know.
But what's the point? It doesn't give any positive to the world, this fight.
I don't know if giving positive to the world is the key here. It's more like, you know.
No, but I mean, it doesn't create a community that helps each other out.
I mean, we definitely could use more, like, trying to find similarities.
Yeah.
And there are similarities.
For sure.
No matter how far apart things are, you know. But it becomes this thing, like, you just kind of start throwing shit around. And I don't know, for me it's always irritating. And that's something also that I had to pay a price for, because I also enjoy doing that. I would tell you about, like, versatile. I can do, I mean, I like to do both. Like, I do the, you know, like, on Monday I can play, I don't know, quartet with Loranka and you know, Peter Fries, and then Tuesday I go and play big band music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm totally fine with that. And I.
But do you and feel that you get caught between two, I don't know, two stools? What do you say in English? I don't remember.
Extremes or something. Yeah.
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 Two chairs.
Like that. Do you feel that none of these groups like accept you, or do you feel accepted by both, or do you feel like you're in between, or how do you?
I'm in between, but that comes also with a price.
Mm. Okay.
Branding.
A branding price, but not the commute, but by the community.
The community.
Do you feel like the big bands people are like, why are you doing that? And then you play solo on 5e, and they're like, why are you doing? Do you feel, or do you feel everyone is including?
No, but also, I'm not seeking to hear points like that from anyone.
No, okay.
Because if somebody has a needs to say something like that, that's their.
Yeah.
Just, I mean, they can say it, but.
Yeah, but I mean.
It doesn't add anything to. And then to me, I'm sure there is that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
it, you know, it happens also now less, but it used to happen a lot that, you know, people who play completely free stuff, then they're like, what, you play like written music and like, you know, occasionally you can play a standard and stuff. Yes.
Yeah.
And I enjoy it. But like everything else, it has to be the right crowd. You know, like, I'm the last guy to go on a jam session. But then, like, there's this quartet I play with Kasper Tom and Andreas Lang and Mahal.
Nice, yeah.
Man, I mean, like, that's the best bossa, like, blue bossa I ever played.
Yeah.
I could do it all night with those guys.
It's
great. But, you know, there is this, like, kind of different tribes.
For sure, yeah.
You know, of like, oh, it's like, come on, what are you doing?
I mean, I studied, did my bachelor in Amsterdam, in the conservatory from Amsterdam, and I remember some people making fun of free music there, saying statements like, oh, they just can't play, so they just try to make noise and stuff like that, right? From like heavy jazz cats that are big band, like great big band musicians. And I also heard the other stuff also here in Copenhagen, like people that make fun of those jazz robots. Right, they say, where people only play what they trained, like monkeys, they say, and then, you know, like, it's, there's definitely some not hate, but people looking down on the opposite side, and that's sad, because I feel like I love good music, and that can be found in every genre on earth, right? Like you will always find good music everywhere. So
right. So it doesn't really matter. And like, yeah. For example, I have to be honest, I cannot listen to like free music on CDs, for example.
There's something, you know, that life is. Like,
I don't like it.
Yeah.
But it has to be certain.
Okay.
Like,
yeah.
You have the same with harsh noise. Like, I can't listen to. I never listen to harsh noise on when I'm home or in my headphones. But when there is a concert, like there is this guy from Malmö who does like this noise against fascism, and he's like no input mixer, like fucking loud, and he plays only for 15-20 minutes, and
it's pure energy.
Yeah, and it's awesome live, right?
Yeah,
because it doesn't give me much. But also it's awesome every time I've seen him 3-4 times. It's not like it necessarily gets old, but like listening to it like on that.
Yeah.
But you also don't put it at the same volume at your place, I assume.
But it's like his physical experience with that for
right.
me.
Yeah,
it,
yeah.
It, when it hits my body and. It's really physical in
it sense. Is. Yeah, it makes me think there's a lot of, I mean, people who listen to like death metal and stuff.
Yeah.
Which they talk about that there is something about concert experiences that, you know, the energy, which is can be pretty dark.
Yeah.
That's something that draws them to it. And it's such a, you know, such a positive thing, like people, you know, gather and like enjoy that stuff.
Yeah.
But like, there's not many people smiling in the audience. Like,
I think it's still like a positive energy. Like, I'm a metal.
Oh, yeah.
I come from the metal
yeah.
background, so
right.
I've been at a lot of metal concerts, and it's positive energy.
Totally. Yeah.
And it's great.
Yeah,
but I've been to some concert, and like, I look, you know, like the simplest way of expressing, like you just see people like intrigued in a way and stuff, and then it's like. 99.9% look like they wanted to kill me. You know? Like, what is that?
Kill you with love. They want to kill you with love.
Sugar over there.
Yeah.
That's what they explained to me.
Yeah.
You know, that it's like that there's something very dark about that stuff.
Yeah.
Mm.
But not in a direct mode, a direct way.
No. I mean, I also went to a lot of metal concerts. I used to play metal as a teenager a lot and stuff. And for me, it was always a very releasing experience, you know?
Right.
Like, you go in and then you have anger for school or contempt for school or whatever. Like, I was super angry with school, obviously. And then to go to a metal concert and just, like, scream and, you know, and go into a mosh pit was, like, a great way of also, not that I consciously thought about it. Like, now I'm releasing negative energy. Like, obviously, it was not that, but I was really enjoying it, and I would come out of the concert smiling, right?
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Like, and sometimes also in the concert be like, yeah, like right. like in a smile, like shouting, shouting, but smiling inside. It's hard to tell. So I don't know how I looked. Like, I hope there's not too many pictures of me from that period. But
I think there should be more. Put them out. If anyone have them, send them to us. Yeah. Yeah.
But then, well, what you mentioned about this, you know, people from different genres like talking down on each other.
Mm.
Like, I like to break that stuff.
Mm.
Not so long ago, I got a commission to write a piece for Big Band that I'm also playing with. And I thought I'm going to write something that it's easier than what I usually do, but still it's probably messed up. That's just what I write. So what it means is that it requires a lot of rehearsal time for it before it starts making sense, because before it starts being organic. And seems like no matter how much I work on it, like how well it's notated, it's pretty messed up.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that, like I wrote a piece and I thought, okay, this is for me acceptable because I still, you know, wanted, you know, wrote what I wanted, but it seems like it's a bit easier to do. And then I show up to the big band, like a professional big band, with all those guys, and some of them been playing, you know, playing big band for, I don't know, 30 years or something like that. And then the lead alto player, he's like, we played once or twice, and then it's like, they can't wait like 4 bars because it's so hard for them. So difficult, because it's like, you know, with big band, especially the traditional way is thinking vertically, right? Like chords and,
yeah.
and
voicings.
Like, yeah. Voicings, right? Like, well, like within the sections also.
Mm.
But here is just like melodies that are like all over.
Yeah.
And in the end, it sounded really great. But after like 2 or 3 takes, I was playing with the band, and after two or three takes, the guy who's playing the alto, he turns around and he says, "I don't understand this." He was just like, he didn't say I'm not gonna play it or anything. He was just like, "I don't understand." And then, you know, then we did it and we recorded, and he's like, "I still don't understand. It sounds good, but I,
okay, yeah.
I don't understand." You know?
That's so nice, actually. Yeah.
But that's the way to do it, you know.
Yeah.
You know, that's.
But that's also like a pretty honest and like good way to say like, I accept it, but I don't get it.
Right.
Like it's fine, right?
It is. Yeah. But you know, I really can relate to the fact that people fall in love with like being good at playing the instrument, like the craftsmanship, yeah. Because it gives you more answers, and it's more describable, you know.
Yeah, it's also easier as a process to attain goals. Like, I want to do this specific thing. I reached this specific thing. Now I will learn the next thing. Like, as a process, it's simpler than this. Oh, I want to create the best music, but I want to reach for something that is unheard of. But what is this thing that is like? It's really the process is. Demand something different.
Yeah, and it's much more measurable technique. Like you can say, okay, now I can play this at 200 BPM.
Yeah.
And then next week at 210, that's like, you know, you made progress.
Yeah.
Whereas if you try to develop your taste and your creative output, it's like, is this better or is this just different? No one knows.
Yeah.
Like, but it's no, it's like, I mean, for me it was it's sometimes hard to not be able to measure the process so much. Then I'm keep working and working and working, and then it's like, is this better now?
Yeah,
it's harder to measure, you know.
Did I even do anything, or were I, like, especially like I've been working a little bit in Ableton, and it's just like you drag these parameters around, and then you change the EQ, and then you, I spent a whole day, and then like. Then you look back like, what did I really do right? I added reverb, and then I did like it's just like absurd details, and then you're like, what the fuck? And I imagine like composing on paper. I haven't done that for some years now, but like composing is a little bit the same, right? You work and work and you work, and if you like actually try to measure what you did, like, yeah, I mean, I wrote 15 bars, and I mean, all of them are. Okay, but the first bar is good, I guess. I mean, I'll use that one.
Then you travel the next morning and like throw out everything.
Yeah. Exactly.
Like you talked yourself into it, but it sounds good.
Yeah, you also get so involved that you... Is that an English expression? You don't see the forest because of all the trees in front of you?
Yeah, well, I don't know if it's an English one, but I mean...
Yeah,
it's a Norwegian one.
You mean like perspective on, you know?
Yeah, you're so much on the detail that you just don't see the bigger picture anymore. Yeah,
right.
Like you see, because when you compose on paper, you see all these different notes, and you know exactly what in which voice, and so on. And then you just the overview of the whole tune is a bit like, at least sometimes like. I have that in the middle of the process, then I need to step back and, as you said before, like with the concerts, listen back to it with like a distance, time distance.
Yeah.
And
I said it before, this interview that Kirsten did with Aksa, he said a great thing about, I asked him what does he think about listening to himself, to recordings and stuff, and you know. Saying that most people, including myself, like when you start listening to that, you don't really appreciate it because it sounds totally different than what you expected.
Yeah.
And he was cool. He was just like, well, I don't think anything changed. I mean, you know, listening to yourself is part of the profession. To be able to put put stuff out there and publish it, you have to be able to do that. And I love that answer because he was just like, "This is part of the gig, you know. This is part of what
you may like it or you may not like it, but just."
But he's just like, you know, sometimes it's hard.
Yeah.
But like to be able to listen to yourself is very important, and I totally agree in that. You know, in that sense, there's not so many I sense that there's not so many feelings right there, you know, it's just something, you know, something you do. At the same time, when I asked him, there is this solo album, like a trumpet he did 20 years ago, like only like noise, like for like 40 minutes. And I begged him to send me, because it's impossible to get really hold of, because it's like sold out for, I don't know, for years. But he was kind enough to send it to me, and then when I went there Monday, I caught up with him, because went to, you know, say thank you, and then he said that those albums are great, this album is great, but then he has recordings prior to that, that he, when he recorded it, he thought that it's not ready, you know, like when he listened to it back then, he thought that it's not ready. And then he said, and I listened to it now, and it was ready.
Yeah.
You know? So even though he said, that's at least my take on it, even though he said it's all right and he likes it and he can listen to himself, it's still something that's not given. Something that takes some getting used to. Either to listen to your own stuff or to listen to the music you create. Because I would dare to make a distinction between those two things sometimes, especially when it's something very personal, like playing solo, you know. I don't know if you ever tried that, but that's something that puts you in a different zone entirely. And I would say it's different than doing that stuff rather than like being part of like a, I don't know, ensemble.
Yeah, because you did a lot of solo trumpet, right?
Yeah.
Because I remember like this 30-year birthday tour, 30 cities, of thing. Yeah. And you recorded an album with that.
I did an album with the documentary.
Documentary as well?
Yeah. It's all on YouTube.
Yeah, okay,
because it's just...
How can we find that?
It's just on YouTube. You just Google Tomasz Dąbrowski solo, and then you'll have a documentary, and there's like a recording.
Okay.
It's not that it's a recent album. I did the three recordings because it was different acoustics. So I wanted to see which one. I didn't want to like patch together different pieces of music. I just wanted to do it in one shot, like 50 minutes, because that's what I've been working on since the... Inspiration for that was from something called Sumie, which is this at least Japanese, there's a different cultures have it, but in Japan it's called Sumie, it's this one stroke painting, which means like if you start doing it, you have to you cannot, you know, take it away, you have to finish the whole thing. So it seemed only right to do it that way, and so I did three recordings, and the one that is on YouTube is from a church, my dad's church. Yeah, in Flexberg. That it's also the music on the album. Yeah, but I cannot stress enough how important it is to play solo. Just to get some perspective on the shit. Like, you know. Seriously, it's the best. It's the best thing
to see
where you're at.
I thought it was really because I was listening this morning to it, and it's really interesting because we had another talk with the. Eric Kim is another trumpet player, and I remember he said like distinctly that everything, and he does more abstract stuff maybe than you, at least the first half that I listened to, he generally does more abstract noises and stuff on his trumpet, and but he said that he always comes from like a really bebop perspective, everything he does is bebop, he said that, and after he said that, when I listened to him, I really hear that everything he does sounds bebop, but I don't hear, I mean, I know you're a great bebop player, but I mean, I don't hear when you play the solo. I hear something different, something that isn't necessarily like genre. Isn't shot out of a genre like. Right? What would you say is like your major inspiration for that solo, or is it just like everything?
The process, you know, it's a process, and I guess I mean I can hear some shit that I grew up with.
Yeah.
Has nothing to do with bebop in any way.
Yeah.
And in my case, I mean, I studied that stuff, but this is something that I felt that you cannot really cheat. Like, it's all the stuff that's processed through all those concerts.
Yeah.
And what is the inspiration for that?
What is your first love in music? Like let me just change the question maybe.
First love in music.
Yeah.
Okay. What? I don't know what to say to that.
No. Like what's an artist or a trumpet?
Can we make it like an ABC?
Yeah.
Like answers.
Yeah,
can you give me some answers that I can choose from?
I would probably say my first love in music was Metallica. That was like the first thing. Like, it hit me like, and then I there was no turning back. I just had to learn an instrument, and I had to, and everything I do, I really not necessarily Metallica, but like the metal thing. I can really hear it in everything I do, and I think that's the way. With Eric also, I believe his first love was like hardcore bebop, and you can really hear that still. So I'm asking the question, what was...
Well, my first one in that regard, yeah, I don't know, man. I started pretty late, so... And also, you know, coming from Poland back then, like, I still remember when I got the first CD, and like CD player. So,
yeah.
And we're for some of the first people in our village to have that stuff.
Mm.
Like, I don't know, mid-90s or something like that.
Yeah.
Way behind the rest of the world. But the first city was Lambada. remember that? Like this piece of... Yeah, look it up.
it has nothing
to do with what we're talking about here. I don't know. I mean, musically, I don't recall... I always had a problem with that because it's not one thing.
No.
Because like the longer I do it, it's just so many things that have an impact on that. And with solo, you know, the thing is, the challenge was also to make it sound like it's not a trumpet somehow.
Right.
Or like to be able to tell, to be able to play for consecutively for an hour where it's all like, it all somehow makes sense. So like this album is not meant to be listen to in like, you know, different order. It's just like you start and then you play
the whole album.
You play the whole album because it's like a whole story thing.
Mm.
So and it's a trumpet. Like you cannot just play lines for an hour.
Mm. No.
Nobody can. And I mean, maybe somebody can. I don't care. But I can, and I had to make it work.
Yeah.
Because with solo, like you have to figure out a way to do it.
Yeah.
And in my case, it's just have ideas about how to do it. It's not enough.
Mm.
Because if you never tried to play solo, try to do it publicly or just for yourself. Try to set up alarm for half an hour and play music that is dear to you by yourself right there, you know? Because first thing you're gonna notice is that you're terrified. Like that you, there's, and because of the, like, that you, it's so stressful and you get terrified, you have no perspective on what's happening, on what you're gonna do next, on like what you know, what you don't know, all those things. And that was inspiration to do it. That was the reason to do it, because I almost, first concert I did solo, I almost ran away off because it's just too much. It's just too much to handle because, you know, I come from jazz world also, so it's at least a trio.
At least a trio.
Yeah,
playing, you know, playing solo, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, I remember my first solo concert and how scared I was.
Yeah.
Like, also how after 10 minutes I was like, what if I run out of ideas and stuff like that,
oh, yeah,
you know? Like,
oh, yeah, that's
somebody, no. I guess somebody did already, like some thesis about that stuff. Because, you know, like I did, when I was here, I was this APD thing, I spent time investigating, like, and interviewing people about the relationship between expression and technique.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how is it that you hear, a lot of people will disagree, but I don't care, like you hear Chris Potter or something, or Michael Brecker, and it's just doesn't say anything. They can play fast, furious, you know, but it doesn't tell me anything. And then I don't know, like I hear, you know, a child hitting stones in somewhere in Africa and like that never had any education. And that's just mind blown. Like, how is that possible? And to translate that to a solo experience, how is it possible that some nights you play 10 minutes and then you're like, fuck!
Yeah.
what am I gonna do now, you know? And then some other nights, which of course this is only possible if you have many, like many concerts, some nights you just kind of wake up after an hour and it's, you know, it wasn't there. Of course, this all is from perspective of somebody who's playing, you know, perception how it was, it's a different thing. But it's a very, I guess that's something also relates to what we talked about before, you know, like this, like be able to play and then actually have some kind of profile. Yeah, that's an ongoing thing, I guess.
And it's a develop, I mean, you will always develop as long as you are, unless you're Peter Bertman, I guess.
That's it. You know, it's gone. Oh shit.
It's time.
Thank you so much. It was amazing to have you here.
Really
and
great
speak
talk.
About everything.
And then you have one more Monday left, and then.
Then the rest of your life.
Yeah. You are free.
Exactly.
The time is served.
I move on with my life. I look forward to playing with this Ocean Fanfare. So Ocean Fanfare is, we did this, we're doing this, the trilogy, which means three albums in 3 years. So we did one album last year that was all acoustic. But the topic about this is about this trilogy is about like sustainability in a way, and how we use our resources and how we use technology. Not to get too much into that, because you can look that up. But from a musician point of view, this for me was super interesting to write for that stuff, because Sven Meinl, who is a saxophone player, he has this program, probably somebody's a computer nerd, they know exactly what I'm talking about, like a synthesizer that you can feed compositions or like feed the recordings, and then it's gonna spit out like a composition based on that.
So it's like an AI thing.
But the thing is that, so that's how it started. So he got that, and then he feed that program some compositions of like from the first album or even before, and then send me a MIDI file of that, and then I transcribed it, and then based on that I wrote music for this, which results in music that is just somehow very coherent and somehow still belongs to that band, but it's written completely different. So it's been we played once with that music. It's
with the new compositions, you mean? Yeah. So this will be the second concert with the new compositions. Yeah, nice.
So we're gonna do that on Monday.
Awesome. That sounds really cool.
And then how can people find you online?
Everywhere. I'm trying to stay up to date. That sounds like an old man. I'm on Facebook. I have my webpage, tomdabrowski.com. Not much happening there though. But I'm trying to stay in the loop with Facebook and Instagram. And I'm on Spotify under different.
A different name.
Yeah, and then I'm traveling quite a lot all over Europe. So that's it.
Great. Once again, thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thank you.
And hope to see you soon.
Yeah.
Yes. See you Monday.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Yeah.